You know, the process is somewhat of a complex process. Obviously, that you know, you have a lot of different systems that you have to integrate with. So each one of the carriers, and carriers meaning the airlines, has their own system you have to integrate with. And so we've been working closely with all the airlines. And in fact, the airlines have been very, very cooperative and collaborative with us as we've walked through the process. But it does take time to make system changes. So as we work through with the airlines, we've worked through a schedule that they could all ensure that they're able to do the cutover based on us meeting both of our needs. And we've done that with the U.S. flag carriers for the past 16 to 18 months.
I know one of the concerns from the airline's perspective was who ends up being responsible. Is this a TSA responsibility? Is this a government responsibility? Or are they responsible? Where did that end up in this whole process?
Well, prior to SecureFlight, the watchlist matching process was being done by the airlines. However, as they cut over to SecureFlight, the responsibility of doing watchlist matching has changed from the airline to SecureFlight.
One of the other big issues was getting all the names, because there were a lot of, and I believe the late Senator Kennedy was once caught in the watch list. How have you resolved those issues? Because there are a lot of John Smiths out there.
Well, what we've done is actually we've got a very intricate redress process that means that if you feel that you've been misidentified or if somebody feels that they've been misidentified as having a name similar to somebody that may be on the watch list, you have the ability to apply for a redress number that in essence is going to confirm that you are not the same person that is on the watch list. And once they do that, they give you a redress number. And so as you make a reservation, that as you include that redress number in there, is that as we do the watch list matching, we're also going to match it against what we call the cleared list. The cleared list is those people who have had names similar but have a redress number, and in essence will clear them so that the issue you talked about really is not an issue, though.
And 100% meaning every single person, I think some people out there say, hey, why weren't people checked before? They were checked, but now everyone is fully checked. What's the difference now between today and, say, 6 months ago?
Well, that's a good question. You know, so to be clear about it is that 6 months ago, everybody who flew on an airplane within the United States was checked. So they were the watch list matching was done. The difference is 6 months ago, the airlines were doing it. As of early June, TSA is doing it.
And the relationship between the SecureFlight and the no-fly list is what?
Well, the no-fly list is the list that we use to do the matching against. So if as we get this list, we match the traveler information against the no-fly list, and assuming that the traveler has provided us all the data that we request, be it full name as it appears on your government-issued ID, date of birth, gender, and redress number, if they have one, that more than 99% of travelers are going to be cleared by providing this information.
So they're related. They're not. I think people often have them because there was worries about does the FBI control the SecureFlight list, but this is all comes through one central list now, right?
Well, the no-fly list is generated by the Terror Screening Center. We're a user of the list,
right?
But we don't own the list.
And that list is controlled by the FBI. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So, there have been stories, and I know GAO reports over how that list gets shared and updated. Do people outside, if you're flying from outside the United States, or is this just in the United States flights that are checked?
Yeah, no. It's anybody that's traveling into, out of, or within the U.S. that the requirement is that they be matched against the watch list.
I know this has been a long time coming, and you've worked very, very hard. Any lessons learned that you pull from having accomplished this milestone?
Well, there's certainly lots of lessons you learn, but one of the things that at the top of it is top of my list anyhow is collaboration. You know, certainly you try to collaborate as much as you can, but in this case, because that there were so many stakeholders in this, is that through constant collaboration, whether it's the airline industry or whether it's government agencies like GAO, who have actually, by the way, GAO has been one of the great supporters of Secure Flight, or other government entities. It's collaboration. The more you collaborate, the better the process gets, and my opinion, the faster it gets done.
And of course, there was just a GAO report a month ago that said that Secure Flight had essentially followed all their recommendations, and we don't often see that from GAO.
Yeah, well, like I said,
do a little party. You have a little party there in the Secure Flight office when that happens.
Well, GAO has been great to work with.
And you mentioned collaboration, and I know there are so many folks involved in this process. How do you do that and get everybody on the same page that it's not the herding cat situation that we so often hear about?
Yeah, well, it is a lot of hard work. But first off, is I think you have to ensure that you all have the same vision. And once you start with the same vision, then you could then work all of the issues one by one. So if it's data issues, you get the right all the right data people in a room and lay out the issues and make them all work together. And so whether it's data, process, or so on, is that's what we did as we went through each one of the parts of Secure Flight. And like I said, everybody was very good about collaborating on their part of it, because they recognized that the vision is the shared vision of all of us, and they all wanted to make that vision work.
And sometimes we get so involved in the little bits of this, it's important to take a step back and say why this is so important. This ensures that bad guys don't get on board planes.
And it does. And a couple other things that it's important to note is that it's consistent. So whether you're traveling on carrier A, B, or C, the same consistent process you're going to get from carrier to carrier. And another part of it is that, what we've tried to do is we've tried to build into this, recognizing all the privacy concerns that people had, is that we built this recognizing the privacy concerns that they had. So we only asked for the minimal amount of data that would get us to completing the mission that we started out to do. And then the other part of it, the other benefit, is the efficiency of it, is that we wanted to ensure that this program was built ensuring efficiency so that the airlines and TSA and the travelers every day could go about their business and would be as efficient as possible in order to get us to where we had to be.
The privacy issue, that seems like there's no end point to that. That has to be something that you constantly revisit to ensure that that's being properly addressed?
It is. And we have a tremendous focus on the privacy part of this. There isn't a day goes by that, I don't ask, in all of the processes, all of our meetings, are we addressing, is there any privacy concerns we should be focused on? And we actually have privacy people in here, they're embedded here, to ensure that we continue our focus on privacy.